Welcome to another edition of the Pick Six Podcast. Will Brinson still on that never-ending vacation that he's been
nice.
On. I'm joined by Bryant McFadden, one of my coworkers here at CBS, and a former National Football League cornerback. And you know what? This is the first time we've ever podcasted together.
Yeah.
We've done some hits together, though.
Yes, we've done some
nice
hits.
We've done some arguing together, right?
You very entertaining.
You disagree with me once in a while.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, well, that means you're entitled to your wrong opinion, but I like that.
Let's see how this goes
how
today.
Do you, first, before we get into some of the stuff going around the league, I want to, you know, because fans might not be familiar with you, your transition from NFL player to doing this, what made you go in this direction?
I always loved sports in general, not just football, but sports. You know, I grew up watching sports. Stayed in tune throughout my collegiate and professional career. And when I was playing with the Steelers, you know, we had so many quality debates in the locker room, on the sideline, throughout practice times, throughout meeting times, that it felt like this is where I needed to be when I was done playing. And not to mention still wanting to be affiliated with the league, feeling like I'm still a part of the league, and just being able to talk about the game of football, you know, it's a dream come true outside of my first initial dream, which was playing in the league.
Plus, he's a Broward County guy, as am I. We both went to high school here in Broward County, so we're local guys. Before we get into some football stuff, the finals just ended. You like talking about a lot of sports. Did you think LeBron quit?
I think the effort was not there from what we saw in the previous three ball games, especially when he realized the game was pretty much out of reach. When you look at the captain, when you look at the leadership that we all believe he provides. We all believe he has that captain role. Your job is to go down with the ship. Your job is to lead by example. And if we're going to lose, I'm losing swinging, not trying to block body blows and head shots.
The whole thing with the injury was kind of interesting to me. He was shaking hands. He dunked after it with that hand.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he comes out with a cast on his hands. I mean, that was a little dramatic.
I agree.
The debate about Jordan and LeBron is now over.
I felt like
Michael Jordan would have never allowed that to happen on his home floor.
And Jordan, me personally, granted, this Golden State Warriors team will go down as one of the best all time, no question. But not winning one ball game. Not winning one ball game. I don't see that happening with a Michael Jordan led finals team, in my opinion.
No. It would not have happened. And it would not have just wilted in the second half on their home floor, you know, trying to get at least one win in that series. It was just a bad look for LeBron. Yeah. They quit, and then he comes out with the cast. Look, he's a great player. He's arguably the second best player of all time behind Jordan. But that was a bad look
on
Friday night. And you know what? Look, the bottom line is they could have played as hard as they wanted to. They weren't winning that series.
Yeah.
But one of the greatest teams of all time, they were pushed to seven by the Rockets.
Yeah, and that tells you how competitive the West is.
They're one of the best teams.
Yeah, they're one of the best. I didn't say the best, but they have to be in that conversation.
See, I'm one of those guys that always goes back to like the Showtime Lakers.
That's where I became a Laker fan, watching the Showtime Lakers, because they made watching basketball as a child fun. And that generated and started my liking of that organization.
See, people don't give guys on that team their due. Everybody knows Magic. Kareem's the most unstoppable shot.
You got Michael Thompson. You got Cooper.
Well, what about Byron Scott?
Byron Scott.
You know, first it was Norm Nixon, then it was Byron Scott. Yeah. But Byron, in today's game, Byron would be a lot. He maybe doesn't shoot quite like Klay Thompson, but Byron Scott could shoot the basketball.
Yeah, and he was extremely athletic, especially taking you off the dribble.
He's a Sun Devil,
you want to throw that in there. Not to mention, me personally, the first annoying, aggravating player was Kurt Rambis.
Yeah.
He paved the way for guys like Dennis Rodman, you know, the Draymond Greens type, just annoying the opposing offensive player. And granted, he really embraced that role.
And then there's James Worthy.
James,
when nobody could touch you, James Worthy would be phenomenal. I mean, look, it's a great debate, but look, when it gets back to LeBron, Friday night was not a good look for LeBron.
I agree.
If you're going to make the case as the greatest player of all time, Michael Jordan.
Flush it.
Yep.
Flush
it. It's done. It can't happen anymore. All right, let's talk some football. Earl Thomas holding out a minicamp.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a surprise. He's not happy with his current situation. There's been talk all offseason about trading him, getting rid of him. You know, Dallas has supposedly been in the market to try and get with him. What do you think, if anything, matters in this situation? Does it?
Well, not right now. It does not matter because, of course, if he's missing minicamp, who cares, really? From the individual standpoint, I believe Earl Thomas, could miss minicamp, and once the season starts, he's ready to go. They're still using the same philosophies that he understands, and he knows he's pretty much the quarterback of that defense in the secondary. So mentally, he's always been on pace and understanding what needs to be done. I think from the future standpoint, this is a bigger deal, because if you don't have Earl Thomas after 2018, the entire legion of boom is pretty much gone. Sherm is San Francisco, not knowing the status of Cam Chancellor as far as health. Now, you still have Byron Maxwell a part of that organization.
Shaquille Griffin is going to play well last year, and I think he's the next star there.
But he's not really a part of the Legion of Boom.
Right.
You remember the Four Horsemen, the original four, and they start implementing guys? Yeah. He's like a sub-type of Legion of Boom roster member. But as far as going forward, the chemistry that Earl Thomas understands, the chemistry that he helped create it, that the swag that he helped create it. If you lose him, now you're starting all over from scratch with a bunch of new players that don't really know the history and the prestige that these guys, Earl Thomas, Cam.
Yeah, but they are starting from scratch, though, Bryant. I mean, they're that defense, no Cliff Averill, no Michael Bennett. I mean, they are kind of starting from scratch. The only group up front, the linebackers are the same.
For the most part, yeah.
The back end. You know, you mentioned you don't know what Cam Chancellor, if he can come back and play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Thomas hasn't been the same player either. He's been banged up and injured over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, no Sherman. So you got youth up front now.
Yeah.
So you have, but it's a changing defense.
In my opinion, I believe even with Richard Sherman, let's say this is a hypothetical that all three players that we mentioned, Cam, Sherman, and Earl, were still playing together. I believe Earl Thomas is the most important player.
Oh, I always thought he was the most important player.
So now if you're losing the most important player after 2018 that's still playing pretty good football because he just turned 29, so he still has quality at least 3-4 good years still left, in my opinion, the eraser is gone. He's a guy that really covered up a lot of mistakes that might go unheard of, but just watching him and seeing how he plays, now you're starting all the way over from scratch.
Yeah,
and right now, at least you have a building block. Earl, we got him for 2018, but now we can allow these young guys to study, follow him, learn from him, because if he's gone in 2019, at least we have a part of him that we still have in that area, in that position group.
He's, by the way, he is one of the only members of the Legion of Boom who has not blocked me on Twitter.
Really?
Richard Sherman.
Why everybody
Richard Sherman blocked me because I sent out a bunch of screen grabs of him holding, and Cam Chancellor blocked me because I made him the most overrated player in the league.
So you're not well-liked in Seattle.
No. No, I am enemy number one in Seattle.
At least you're
embracing the whole Russell. Then there's the whole Russell Wilson phenomenon.
He don't like you either.
No.
At least you're embracing it, Pete.
I'm honest. They don't like honesty.
I like that you embrace being disliked in Seattle.
But you're right. Earl Thomas has always been, in my mind, the most important guy on the back end there because they play that cover threes in the middle of the field. He can do so many things.
Yes.
The range. If he doesn't play, it is a hit to him. But you're in transition. So now you might sit back and say, and they have, you know, entertain some offers, I think, on him.
Yeah, they need to come down on the asking price, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I heard some rumors, a first and a third and then a second. No one is given that.
No.
At best case scenario, you probably would get, at best, a third rounder.
Or two or three,
I don't think a team give you a two.
Back end two, maybe, I wouldn't give a two.
Well, you don't know if you're going to be in the back end.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, you're right. Like, the Cowboys make that deal. They don't think they're going to be in the back end.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, you know, there's... These guys miss these mini camps. Mm-hmm. Everybody makes a big deal out of it. I've been around this league for 30 years, and it's one of the most overblown stories out there.
Yeah.
It is a story, though, when you start missing time in training camp.
Mm-hmm.
For example, your former team, Le'Veon Bell, last year, didn't take part in training camp.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back and look what he did in the early part of last season, he wasn't the same guy. You need the reps, right? You need to get, even though they're not hitting like they used to back in the day, you need to get banged around.
The chemistry.
Football shape and in shape are two different things.
Two different things. You can train all day by yourself or with your personal trainer, but it's not the same when you're running plays. When you're in practice mode, which is the same almost as game mode, mentally and physically, you can't really duplicate that as far as training on your own or with a personal trainer. So I agree.
What's the toughest part of taking your training off the field when you think you're in shape and then you get into the training camp grind? What becomes the toughest part? Is the contact? Is your body? Is it body soreness? What becomes the biggest transition for you?
Just getting used to the format all over again, because when I train, getting ready for training camp, I would train with other guys that played the same position that I played, along with other positional players, and we would try to implement a practice style training session. As far as wide receivers, we'd go through play drives when I'm covering them, not to mention getting conditioning involved also. But when you transition to your team, now you have 10 other guys that are all on the same page. So you're doing a lot of thinking. You're trying to make sure you're extremely verbal. So you're talking, you're learning, and you're doing all of these things on the fly. And what people don't understand when it comes to a physical sport, when you're doing a lot mentally, that puts a lot on you physically also, because you're thinking on the fly. So first and foremost for me, when I'm in the huddle, I hit a play call, get to my side of the football field, offense comes out to the line of scrimmage. Now I'm looking at the formation. I see the formation, and now I start to get potentially certain plays in my mind that I can dissect so I can anticipate on being in position to make a play. Not to mention change of strength, motioning. You get a motion go through, now we can have a double call. Now we got to change our first initial coverage to something else on the fly. Now you're looking at the quarterback, you get your three-step read, if you're playing press technique, you're in game mode, and you got to do it all over again. That's what people don't understand, is that when you go through a lot mentally, it puts a lot of wear and tear on your body, even though you're not moving as fast as you potentially can because you're thinking fast.
Well, they say it's especially hard. Like, you don't usually see rookie receivers blast onto the scene and become these big playmakers. It doesn't. It has happened, but it's usually second and third year. And they say because they're reading routes on the run for the first time, maybe in their careers, and that slows them down. They're not playing the game as fast. You notice that too when you're working against these receivers?
You notice that with receivers and also defensive players, especially in the skill, as far as with the skill guys, because they're so used to having one priority and doing it. And not to mention a lot of these receivers that are young and they get drafted extremely high, most of the defensive backs they're playing against, Pete, probably won't get a look in the NFL.
Right.
So just from the God-given ability, I'm better than you.
Right.
I will beat you. Even if you're in position to make a play, I am a better athlete than you, so I will dominate you. Now when you get across the line of scrimmage from on an NFL team, you look at a guy who could have been a fourth rounder, but he was a beast wherever he came from. Now I got to look at him, try to find a way to put myself in position, but also I got to look and see what they're doing, what the safeties are doing. I'm not used to seeing safeties rotate down or rotate away from me on the fly, and I got to look at the linebacker to see if he's helping out. And I got to look and see what leverage this corner is giving me, and not to mention I got to run my own route. So that takes time as far as getting comfortable and relaxed, and that's why you said, you know, most receivers that year two, that especially year three, is where you start to see young receivers flourish. Outside, and there is an exception to that, in my opinion, as far as the gifted receivers, as far as measurables. Because if you're 6'4", 6'5", a Calvin Johnson type, yeah, you might be doing a lot as far as thinking, but you are a physical mismatch for any defender, and that will provide a lot of success sooner than later than an average-sized receiver.
You know, last week I talked to Tyreek Hill, and I asked him, I said, Tyreek, when you line up with your speed, do you ever look across at the corner and see fear in his eyes? And he says he has.
Mm-hmm.
And you played the position.
Yeah.
If you were playing Tyreek Hill and you got to line up against Tyreek Hill, what are you doing against him?
Well, first of all, depending on the coverage, if I'm in a situation, man to man, I might not get any safety help. I have to understand and know what his strength is, which is speed. So if he gets anywhere within 4 to 5 yards of my cushion, I better open up and run like I'm running from a pit bull. I got to run. I'd rather him catch the shorter pass, come up and make the tackle, we live the fight another day. Because the thing about Tyreek Hill, he can score at any given time, and that can change the ball game as far as momentum. So I have to understand that. So it's almost like, you know, going against a boxer. You know, if he hits you with that right hook, you might go to sleep. So be mindful and protect yourself away from that right hook. So you know what, Tyreek? You're not going to beat me deep. I want to see your route running ability. Let's make him run intermediate routes. Because the thing about a player like Tyreek Hill, when you have a player like him, Pete, and if you're an offensive play caller, guess what you want to do? You want to see him score fast. I have to realize that as a corner. So I have to play against that, knowing that they know he's the fastest player on the football field at any given time. They will want to score fast. Most offensive coordinators like to do that when they have that type of toy to work with. So I have to play that. You can have everything underneath. Because route running could be in my opinion, that's one of his weaknesses. He hasn't really grasped that skill set just yet.
He's kind of new to it, yeah.
Which is no surprise there.
Right.
So make him do something that he's not comfortable with as far as displaying his talent. Because we know he's comfortable with running four twos and running by you. So you know what? If you want to catch everything underneath as far as the slants, the curls, the outs, you're going to do that. But I'm going to tackle the catch. But I can't allow you to score in a matter of 4 seconds.
Do you press him and get your hands on him, or do you play off man against him because you're so fearful of him going by you? He's not a big guy.
Me personally, yeah. Just watching the game initially, I probably would start off playing off. And here's why. The first quarter, a lot of receivers have all the energy in the world. Allow him to use some of that energy against him. So in the second half, he's not as fresh. So therefore, if he's not as fresh, he's not able to use the energy that he was using in the first quarter. I have an opportunity to get my hands on him more in the second half. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Yeah.
So he's not going to be as fast because he's worn down.
A little bit, yeah.
And the fear of him running by you isn't as great either.
Exactly.
He's still fast.
He's going to run by you regardless, but the fear is not there like it would be in the first quarter, because the first quarter, especially the first series, the first few series in the ball game, he's fresh like I'm fresh. I know that. We all know that, vice versa. So you know what? Let him run some gas out a little bit before he fills up. Run some gas out. And then the second half, I feel like I'm in a better position because he's not as fresh to put my hands on.
Which receiver gave you the most problems when you were playing?
You know, one of the receivers that gave me the most problems my rookie year, outside of Jimmy Smith. Jimmy Smith was
the most underrated receiver to play in this league.
Oh, my goodness. In 2005, we played Jimmy. We played Jacksonville and Pittsburgh. Byron Leftwich was that's my first career interception was against B. Left also in that game. But Jimmy Smith, all his routes looked the same. I couldn't pick up anything on him. And granted, I didn't know a lot because I was a rookie, but just seeing how fluent he was and how strong he was as a route runner, he was a beast. Like you said, I think he is one of the most underrated wide receivers in the game as far as the last two plus decades.
He had a 3-year span where his numbers were Jerry Rice like. They were, and every guy I've ever talked to, cornerbacks, you're just saying it now, but like Samari Roll had some battles with Jimmy. Samari Roll insists that Jimmy's the toughest receiver he's ever played by far.
Jimmy was a beast.
And he said, because he was so strong, if you put your hands on you, he got his hands off him, but he was big and he could run.
Mm-hmm.
See, Keenan was the better route runner,
yeah.
Keenan McCardell. Jimmy was the star.
Jimmy was the star, and Jimmy was a better athlete.
Oh, much better athlete.
Yeah. Another player that many people probably forgot about, you know, he's no longer with us, is Chris Henry.
Chris could fly.
Oh, my goodness. My rookie year, he was a rookie also in 2005. So a lot of times when I came in the sub-package situation as far as nickel and dime, he would be in. Ike used to always follow Chad Johnson at that time. And Chris, me and Chris would battle. And the thing about Chris, and also kudos to Carson Palmer. I say to this day, Carson Palmer is probably one of the best deep throwers I've ever seen and played against. On a post route, when Chris Henry got inside of your leverage, Carson would lead him to the promised land. You better believe Chris would get there. And no one really knew he was that fast until you're up on him. Because me, when I saw him on tape, okay, he can run. But when he got up on your toes, oh my goodness, Chris was a beast.
And he had that long stride.
And he had that chip on his shoulder. He had that mentality like, I'm a tough guy, and I'm going to show you I'm a tough guy. Extremely big-time competitor, but the crazy part about it, Pete, that because of what happened and some of the issues he had away from the football field, he never got a chance to show really how consistently he could dominate.
That team was very, very good. If Palmer doesn't get hurt in that playoff game,
they don't beat us.
I don't know.
Do now, you're already banned in Seattle. Don't get banned in Pittsburgh.
I don't know. Chemo got him that day.
I mean, that Chemo was just trying to know some football.
It was a good play.
And the crazy part about that is that we all respect the game, and Chemo was an unbelievable professional. He was extremely hurt when that happened. But the fans, because they disliked us anyway, when they started booing and talking to us crazy, that turned us from the mindset of, we're apologetic, we're sorry, man, we're sympathetic, you know, we're trying to really show our gratitude and how hurt we are to you. It's now like, F this. You know what?
We're going to show y'all what's up. Wasn't he going deep on that play?
He went deep to Chris Henry. Yeah, Chris Henry caught it.
That's right.
Yeah, he went deep to Chris Henry. Yeah, exactly. It's coincidence that we just talked about Chris Henry. But Chris Henry caught a deep one. And then, like I said, the fans were, the stadium went bananas. So we go from feeling sorry to being like, forget all of this. You know what? We're going to show y'all what's up now. We don't like y'all. Y'all don't like us, but it wasn't done on purpose.
No. Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah,
absolutely
it wasn't done on purpose.
All right. Speaking of quarterbacks, I was out in Kansas City last week, spent time with Patrick Mahomes. Man, the kid gets it.
You love Patrick Mahomes. Before you spent time.
Oh, I know. I like the big arm. He was my favorite quarterback in the draft. But more than that, though, just talking to Andy Reid and some of the players and stuff, the kid. Think about this, Brian. Last year, after practice, he would work out with receivers, but he wouldn't bring any of the starting receivers out. You know why? He didn't want to make it look like he was standing there trying to take Alex Smith's job.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had the utmost respect for Alex Smith, who handled the situation very well. But this kid gets it. He gets it. Now, there's still some flaws. Sometimes he gets into that pitching motion more than quarterback, and they're working on his feet. But I'm telling you, that offense... When you got him, Hunt,
Hill, Sammy Watkins,
Kelsey, Watkins. Yeah. I mean, and then Chris Conley. Got to keep an eye on Chris Conley,
too. I like Chris Conley. I mean, that offense took steps in the wrong direction when he got hurt last year,
correct,
in my opinion.
So are the Chiefs the best team in the West?
Right now, no.
I'm with you. But I'm going to hear who you say.
I don't think so, because the unknown about the young quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, scares me. Now, I think he has the best. He's in a great situation because of the players they have surrounding him and Andy Reid.
Right.
You know, Andy Reid, he does wonders with quarterbacks, especially young quarterbacks. But just the unknown, I don't know. So when you talk about the West that I believe, once again, would be real competitive, I'm not quite ready to say their number two, they're somewhere in between that 3 or 4 range right now.
But they could win it.
They could win it. And if they won it, it wouldn't surprise me.
I think any of the four teams could win that
division. Yeah, I agree. If any one of the four teams won that division, I wouldn't be surprised. I guess the team that I would put.
You put the Chargers.
Number one would be the Chargers.
Yeah, me too.
And the team, I guess the team that would surprise me the most if they won it would be the Raiders.
I want to see if Gruden's the same guy. The game has changed a little bit. I mean, he's a smart man. He would probably figure it out. He's been around the game, but you got to see it first.
Yeah, and I don't believe in the defense. The last 2 years, that defense has been bad.
It's been bad.
It's been bad.
But you know, Paul Gunther comes over from Cincinnati, and he's a good coach. They've added some people. I still worry about the corners. I
think Conley
secondary. Needs to play well for them this year, and but the Chiefs defense is very good either.
The Chiefs defense quiet as kept. They really missed Eric Berry when he went down. Even though they had an outstanding corner in Marcus Peters, they still had inconsistencies at that position outside of Peters, and not to mention playing tough football against the run.
And the pass rush wasn't.
And
what
the pass
said.
Rush
the
was not.
The run game was a disaster on defense.
Yes, that run defense they had was horrible. So for me, if you can't stop the run, you won't make it long. As far as if you get into the playoffs, you won't play long in the playoffs.
I agree. Yeah. So clearly, you like the Chargers. I like the Chargers for the reason being Rivers and the pass rushers. You give me Rivers, and you take those two edge rushers, and Ingram and Bosa, and Hayward, who's one of the most underrated corners. Kid had a great year last
Casey
year.
Hayward, Casey Hayward, Vanderbilt. Yep.
So when you look at that group of guys, I think they're the team.
Yeah, my only concern I have with the Chargers defense is their run defense. They were horrible a year ago against the run, but they had they added some pieces. Durrell and James can be a box Cam Chancellor type of safety for them to help with the run. Not to mention, a name the one is really talking about, Pete, is Jason Verrett. If he gets healthy.
Right.
Because quiet is kept, when he has been healthy, and it hasn't been a lot, he's played real good football. So you finally get a chance to see a healthy Jason Verrett paired up with Casey. Not to mention, you got Desmond King, who played
well,
real
year.
Good football. Yep. He's like a hybrid player, but he can play the perimeter as a corner, inside as a slot, also moving around in the back end as a safety. They have a lot of talent. They have the best secondary on paper based on what we know now in that division, and not to mention they have to be in the top
better
four.
Better than Denver?
Yes, better than Denver. Both corners, even if you don't have
Harris isn't better than – Verrett's not better than Chris Harris.
But Chris Harris – based on the last 2 years of play, he's not better than Hayward.
No, Hayward's been better the last 2 years, or at least last year.
And now we get a chance to see Bradley Roby finally emerge to be a starting safety. I mean, starting corner. Right. So what will he have in store? And
the safeties are okay.
The safeties are okay. I think the Chargers, they have a better cast of safeties.
See, for me, it comes down to this league is always the quarterback and pass rushers league. It always is.
I agree.
And Rivers is better than Keenum. Rivers is better than Derek Carr. Rivers is better than Patrick Mahomes right now. Yep. The team with the best pass rushers, Von Miller's the best pass rusher.
But
Bosa and Ingram together are better than
any
of the group.
And I agree with you that Von is the best individual pass rusher in that division. But Bosa, it's not that far away.
No. And but you're also adding Chubb this year, too.
Let's see. But it's almost like the Patrick Mahomes. It's the unknown.
Right.
Will he show up to be a big-time playmaker, or will it take some time? We don't know. We have to wait and see. But you talk about collectively, those two guys in L.A. with the Chargers, they can take over a game by themselves.
See, Melvin Ingram doesn't get the due he deserves.
Yes.
He was fantastic last year.
Oh, he was fantastic.
He is.
He's eager
to
really do it
again. I've talked to a lot of guys in this league, and you know you play with mean man James Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
Melvin Ingram has that mean man approach.
I like it. I like it.
I do, too. I don't mind it at
all. And I think every defense, they have to have that type of personality.
Right.
At least for one guy,
right?
In my opinion.
Got to have the nastiest.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of defenses, I'm going to Jacksonville this week for their
Duval.
Mini-cap.
You love Jacksonville too, Pete, so let's keep that real.
It was my home for 30 years. Uh-huh. I have no preference on who the team winning or losing. I don't care one way or the other. But I will say this, that team is loaded.
Mm-hmm.
When I did, and in my top 100, we're going to get into that in a bit, my top 100 came out Monday.
Yep.
There are 8 Jaguars on the top 100.
Mm.
8.
Of course, I would imagine the majority is from the defensive side.
The majority is from the defensive side.
Mm-hmm.
Can you name the 8?
Starting with the defensive players.
There are 2 offensive players, by the way.
Of course, the 2 offensive players would be Leonard Fournette.
1.
And newly signed Noel.
2.
Yep.
Correct.
Jalen Ramsey.
3.
Telvin Smith, Florida
4.
State.
Yeah, look at you, Florida State, Florida State.
Unfortunately, you have a Hurricane in Calais Campbell.
5.
Malik.
6.
Jackson. A.J. Bouye.
7.
And I'm missing 1.
The young and pass.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yannick.
Yep.
From Boston College?
No, from Maryland.
Maryland. Went to Maryland.
So you're talking about 8 players.
Mm-hmm. Yannick 6, and Gotwick.
6 on defense. Miles Jack is going to be a star on that defense.
I'm glad you didn't put him on the list.
I almost did.
No, you had an argument. He's not quite there yet.
No,
but
he's not. But I like to...
He's trending in the right direction.
His last 3 games in the postseason was outstanding. They did him a disservice, playing him at strong side early in the year and making him learn 2 different positions.
He has a home now.
He's
in the middle.
He will be a star. But that defense,
yeah.
I mean, you're talking about Ramsey's, in his third, going into his...
Third year, if I'm not mistaken. I think this is his third year.
Third year.
Yeah.
Then you got Boye's he's 26.
Playing pretty good football.
Yannick is going into his third year.
Yep.
Miles Jack is going into his third year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're talking, Telvin's not an old guy. The only old guy on the defense is Calais Campbell.
Yeah, Calais, and then you have Marcel, who's still there, right?
Yeah, but he's not old.
Marcel
Darius is in shape, too. Yeah. I saw him. He's in shape.
This defense could be even better than it was a year ago. Me and my personal opinion for me. This is their year to either get there or they won't. And here's why I say that. Because the strong suit of that team is the defense. And the pieces that we all name pretty much won't be there in 2019. A lot of key players, especially in the interior of that defense as far as money. And eventually you're going to have to pay the Miles Jacks of the world and the Jalen Ramsey. So this defense won't be as close as far as personnel-wise. It won't be the same in 2019. So 2018, got to make a run. Got to make a run because Marcel, it's safe to say he might not be there in 2019.
Well, one of them
won't
be.
He said Malik Jackson.
One of those guys certainly will not. That's why they drafted Taven Bryan out of Florida,
and
who is a good player.
Also, too, you see AJ is getting paid nice money. You can't afford to pay top-tier corner money to 2 different guys in the secondary. That's not going to happen, Pete. You can't.
Well, they'll have to.
You can't find the means to do so.
You could. You get. I mean, look, they drafted Ronnie Harrison at safety. He'll eventually take over for one of the old
Gibson
guys.
Gibson or Church won't be there in 2019. That's another name that you can't call right. on in 2019 so you as could, far as you split could, personnel.
You could realistically get rid of Church or Gibson or both. Calais, probably not Calais, probably give him one more year. But Darius and Jax and or Jackson.
Yeah, it's safe to say two of those defensive right. Interior players won't right. be there. That's right. why they used the first round on Taven Bryan from Florida.
Who's a darn good player.
I heard he's looking real good also.
And playing the big end.
Yeah,
which,
yeah.
And he played inside of Florida. He was playing the big mm-hmm. end. But now we go to the other side of the football, and people are still concerned about Bortles, obviously. Now, I will tell a lot of people out there right now who listen, who criticize Bortles on a regular basis, that there were a lot of circumstances that were involved in why they shut it down in the championship game.
Mm-hmm.
One being the receivers. They did not trust the young receivers. Those guys were running wrong routes the entire year. They didn't, you know this, they were young guys. One of them was a street free agent. Dede Westbrook got picked up. He was suspended, and he didn't do it for, you know, the first, what, seven games or whatever. So they were thrown to a bunch of nobody. They didn't trust the receivers, A. The tight end was non-existent because Mercedes Lewis couldn't beat me in a foot race last year. And then the running game, the offensive line, was kind of falling apart because Cam Robinson got hurt,
yeah.
And they were struggling. And Fournette wasn't the same player
no.
Throughout the season. So everybody likes to put it on Bortles. He had a stretch in December where he was very, very good. He had yeah. four games.
The playoff stretch, he was real good.
He's never going to be
that guy,
a star who can carry a team, but he can be good enough if everything around him
I
is
think
good enough.
He has to understand, and I agree with you also, I don't think he can be a volume type of quarterback that you can rely on to have close to 40, 45 attempts, and he come through with a big-time win for you. I don't think he has that DNA as a quarterback, but I think he's starting to understand and get the concept managing the system, believing in the system, making timely plays, and most importantly, don't turn the football over. Bill Cowher used to tell our quarterbacks all the time, there's nothing wrong with punting the football because when we punt the football, we give our legit outstanding defense an opportunity to show their worth. But if you allow or create turnovers, our legit outstanding defense can't show their worth because they're going against momentum and now their backs are against the wall, and you don't play the same football when your back is against the wall as in coming out on the football field from the sideline playing with a lot of feel to protect. So he has to understand that. And as a young player, I didn't understand that concept. What you mean there's nothing wrong with punting the football? And he was saying that to say this. Don't force the issue and then create a turnover because momentum is a great, powerful thing. You can't see it, but you can feel it. And when it's going against you, it's a snowball effect.
See, I think Bortles needs to throw more on first down. That's going to sound crazy.
And they did so in the playoff game.
Right.
You remember?
And he was much better on first down.
Especially on first down, the play action was it was important for them because if you're a Patriots player, you know you're going to hand the ball off.
Right.
But you keep them on their toes as players and as play callers, and they really
– He was very good. He was very good in the first half against New England. He was very good against Pittsburgh. Here's the thing, and you'll know this because you've played in the league – there are moments in a guy's career where no matter who he is, the locker room's going to have doubts about him,
mm-hmm.
right? He's going to have to prove it at some point. It's got to be prove it time. This might sound absolutely crazy, but according to the guys I talked to, you know when his prove it moment was? Against Buffalo. They didn't throw the ball at all. Remember, they couldn't throw it at all. But he ran for 90 yards, and he toughed it out.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly, a lot of those guys in that locker room said, hey, wait a second. This is our – look at this guy.
Yeah.
We asked him to run for 90 yards, and he did it.
He did it, and he embraced doing that. He's understanding the concept of doing whatever it takes, and I think that's a part of his role. Because like you said, we both agree he's not a volume type of quarterback, but he's athletic when need be, and because of those runs – that allowed them to get to the second round. Because if you don't make those runs, Buffalo was right there. Buffalo was right there with
they
the
also knew Jacksonville also went into that game knowing that Buffalo wasn't going to score on them so they could play that way.
And that's you have that luxury when you have that type of defense.
But in Pittsburgh, they knew they had to score.
Yeah.
Even with that
and they
defense,
did.
They knew they had to
score. And the defense came through big with Pittsburgh because the thing about that game, if they don't jump out like they did against Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh would have won that ball game.
I agree.
Because eventually they were going to start clicking, which they did, but they were just so far
but
deep
even like when Pittsburgh
hole.
Clicked, I mean, like he Antonio Brown had made an amazing catch in the end zone with A.J. Boyer draped all over him.
Wait, he's a player that does that. So it didn't surprise it. It was a great catch, but he's like, We've seen them do that time and time again.
But you know what, though? Jacksonville, for some reason, has always had success against Pittsburgh.
Listen, when I played in Pittsburgh, the player that we hated the most was Rasheem Mathis. Every time we played against the Jacksonville Jaguars, he got a pick six.
I know.
It didn't. I don't want. I'm like, what? I'm like, what kind of relationship Big Ben and Rasheed had? They have, because he gets a pick six every time, and we had some battles. But this guy, man.
But they did beat him twice that year.
Yeah.
Back in the day, they used to beat him when Jacksonville was in the same division with him. They have great battles.
And back in Three
they
Rivers.
Taylor still holds the rushing record. Well, had the
in Pittsburgh when in Three Rivers. That night game.
Yeah, he was unstoppable.
I call him Fred P.C. Taylor. The P.C. stand for People's Champ.
He was one.
Oh, my goodness. Fred Taylor was a beast.
All right, let's get to my top 100. We'll go through the top 10, and you can tell me if you agree or disagree.
Okay.
Aaron Rodgers, number one.
Disagree.
Why?
He should not be number one as far as what we saw in 2017 and coming into 2018. My number one would be Tom Brady. MVP?
I have a debate. I had a hard time between the two of them, but I would take Rodgers.
MVP, he's healthy. His cast is once again back again. Now, Julian Edelman, that just came out of nowhere, but they'll be fine. He won't miss the
entire season. It doesn't matter who either one of these two throws.
And he played outstanding last season.
Yeah, but Rodgers healthy is better than Brady.
I can't say that.
Brady's the greatest quarterback of all time because of what he's done, but right now Rodgers is better than Brady.
I mean, you know what you sounding like right now? You sound like the LeBron James fans who claim that he's better than Jordan.
No, he was, but
that's what you're sounding like.
No, Rodgers is better than Brady. He hasn't won enough.
So he's not better.
Well, he is better.
Oh!
You could be a better player and not have
one. How can you be better than another player, but you don't win enough?
Doesn't your coach always tell you it's a team game, football?
Yes. And clearly, offensive-wise, Aaron Rodgers has had a better supporting cast than Tom Brady.
Really?
Yes, really.
Where's the guy that's been a level of Gronk?
Gronkowski, look at the wide receivers that Aaron Rodgers have had the luxury of playing with throughout his career.
Jordy.
Yes. Pro Bowler.
But he broke down.
No. We're not talking about what happened. Jordy Nelson, Greg Jennings, Davante Adams, James Jones, just those four guys outside of the Randy Moss effect in New England. Tom Brady
Edelman,
has not.
No, Gronk. Welker.
Listen. You're talking about guys that evolved to be outstanding players with Tom Brady.
Right.
It's safe to say if Jordy played elsewhere, because Jordy was a second round pick.
Jordy wouldn't have been as what he was without Rodgers. No way.
Greg Jennings either, huh?
Well, you saw what he was. What was he when he left?
I mean, that was the tail end of his career.
No, Rodgers, just like the receivers in New England.
Julian played quarterback in college.
Just like the receivers in New England, they get better with Brady. No. And Rodgers.
I disagree. I give you that, but just from the pure individual skill set, coming into this league, those four guys that I named from Green Bay were better than the Wests of the world.
But were they better receivers?
Julian.
Was any one of them better than Wes Welker and Julian Edelman?
Greg Jennings?
No.
Yes.
No, he was not.
Greg Jennings was a consistent Pro Bowler.
He wasn't better than those two. They were the same.
It's same.
And nobody's better at their position than Gronk.
I'll give you that.
Not even close.
No, not even close.
So there's
no
question.
That's the one. But outside of the other guys, if we're talking about fresh in the league, you're taking the four guys that I named from Green Bay, then the three, four guys that we're naming outside of Gronkowski from the Patriots, in my opinion.
But we got to include Gronkowski because Gronkowski.
Okay, so I'm giving you
so
one.
So I take Gronkowski and those receivers over what the Packers have.
You're talking about one player, and I'm winning with about three or four?
I never thought that James Jones was that good.
Okay, and I agree with you, but he was better than.
He wasn't better than Welker or Edelman.
We're talking about Danny Amendola. We're talking about Chris Hogan of the world. Come on. Okay. We're talking about guys that have been cut
multiple
times.
That's last year. I'll give you that. They had nothing last year. Yeah. All right, so you put Brady over Rodgers. So that's 1-2. I got him 1-2. I got Rodgers over Brady. Mm-hmm. Number three, Aaron Donald.
Ooh, I love it. I mean, you can make an argument about Aaron Donald being number two.
You could almost make an argument of Aaron Donald being number one.
I agree.
But I'm not going to
put it. If you had Aaron Donald number one, I wouldn't have such a gripe.
No, I wouldn't. I thought about it, too, because he was that dominant last year.
Yeah, spectacular.
Von Miller, number four.
I don't like that.
Why? Guy changes games.
Juan sometimes didn't show up all the time last year.
He changes games. He still had a great year.
He had a great year, but we're talking about a guy that we know can dominate.
Who would be in that four spot ahead of him?
You got to have Antonio Brown.
Well, I got him one spot behind him, yeah, so you're nitpicking.
I'm nitpicking, but I think the consensus as far as the listeners would feel like Antonio should be over Vaughn.
I think Vaughn changes games more than Antonio does.
No.
Yes, he does.
It's
a game-changing position.
No.
Game-changing position.
No.
If you had your choice, both of them being healthy in their prime, both of them being prime and they're healthy, which one would you take on your team?
Antonio.
Oh, my God. Take the value position.
I'm taking Antonio Brown.
I'm taking the pass rusher. You can have your little wide receiver. I'll take my pass rusher.
I mean, A.B. Come on, listeners. I wish you guys can call in and tell us how you feel. I know so many people be like, B-Mac, you're right.
Yeah, you're entitled to your wrong opinion. Huh? Yeah, you can tweet at us.
Tweet at us, please.
Tweet at your handle is
BMAC _ Sports Talk, and also tweet at Pick Six. Pod.
Yeah, tweet at Pick Six. Don't tweet at me because I know that I got enough of them coming at me.
Yeah, because he's gonna get blocked again.
All right, Jalen Ramsey 6.
I think that's a bit high, but I can see
he's the best corner in the league.
Yeah, your reasons for having him top 10. And you're ready to put him the best corner after one
he's
outstanding
the best
year.
He's the best corner in the league.
I think Patrick Peterson would have some.
I love Patrick Peterson. But what about Xavier Rhodes?
Florida State guys.
I know. But Jalen Ramsey's a Florida State guy, too.
I mean, DBU. I think, like I said, I think it's a bit high, but I can understand Jalen, the year he had, coming into this season once again. So I can see that logic.
7, Gronkowski.
I think, okay, yeah, I don't have an issue there.
8, Khalil Mack.
I have an issue there.
Why?
Now, I said Vaughn at times was a bit inconsistent at times for the player, right? Not for the average
player.
Well,
it wasn't his Super Bowl winning year.
Yeah. Now, for Khalil, the issue I have with Khalil is that I think Khalil is one of the best gifted defensive players in the league. I think Khalil is like that LeBron James as far as measurables, athleticism, speed, quickness. You don't see a guy his size do what he can do. And that's the issue I have.
He was
productive, but
he had a lot of pressures.
I need Khalil to give me what Aaron Donald does consistently. And Aaron Donald is always double teamed, but he's strong. He's relentless. He's physical. He dominates regardless. And
he's also miscast a little bit in the last defense to Mac.
And that could be a big issue. And this is why I believe 2017 is a big year because.
No, 18.
2018, I'm sorry. It's a big year for Khalil because now he's in a different system.
Right.
And you talk about Gunther coming over from Cincinnati. I think he will have a better
plan. By the way, this isn't based on just how they played
and
last
it's coming
year.
In
this
2018.
Is kind of, yeah,
but still, like, I think being in the top 10 for Khalil the last 2 years for me, I haven't seen the dominating effect that I believe he can display.
All right. Number 9 didn't even play last year, so J.J. Watt.
How is he in the top 10?
Because when he's healthy, he's in the top 10, and he's healthy. He's healthy.
When was the last time he's been healthy?
2 years ago. He's healthy. But he's healthy.
We thought he was healthy last year.
Well, he got hurt. He got hurt.
I just want to know. But before he got hurt, we thought he was healthy.
It was a different injury.
That's what I'm saying.
See, the only guy that I didn't put in here that was hurt last year was Andrew Luck, because we don't know where he is.
And that's fair. But
like Marshall Yanda. Is it one of the best guards in the league? He missed almost all last year.
Yanda is the best guard.
So you got to take injuries into account. Odell Beckham.
Okay, my thing is this. Why are you not taking injuries into consideration with JJ when the last 2 years he's been hurt?
Because he's healthy now.
We thought that a year ago at this time that he was
a different
healthy.
Injury, though.
So you
he
have
had
to...
an ongoing back injury or
oh,
something.
Oh, wait. So you're giving him... positive. You're giving him kudos for having a different injury?
No, I'm just saying.
They're both for season ending.
But he's healthy. Just like Odell Beckham. Odell Beckham's healthy now.
And that's fair to say if you have Odell higher than what many may believe he should be at because he's been healthy the other seasons.
All right, Cameron Jordan at number 10.
That
guy's a beast. That
one great year. If you're going to have
he had a bunch of good years.
Last year was
a great year.
Last year was great.
Right.
But if you're going to have Cameron Jordan 10, you might as well have Jones top 10 also from Arizona.
Chandler Jones. No, he's not as good as Cameron Jordan.
But
he had a 17 sack season. I get it.
Exactly.
Who are you? You griped with me about a couple of these guys. Who goes in? Who should be in?
How in the world You do not have the offensive player of the year in the top 10 in Todd Gurley.
I had him there and I moved him out.
Why? What? Why? Why did you move Todd Gurley?
Everything and anything.
Stop it.
I
take your bias out of this, Pete.
Running back in the top 10.
You have to stop doing that.
Because I don't think there's that much difference between Gurley and Bell and Fournette and the whole. They're all backs.
No. I agree with you. There's not a lot as far as difference with those two players, Bell and Gurley. Now the gap. The separation gap is large after those two.
Even though Kareem Hunt led the league in rushing last year.
I don't care. He's not in the conversation with those two top backs, in my opinion. And Gurley has to be in the top 10. He has to be.
He wasn't in my top 10.
And you said I had him in there and I moved him because you hate
running
backs.
No, I moved him down because I thought.
You don't like giving running backs their praise.
I wanted to put Watt in there because when he's healthy, Cam Jordan was phenomenal last season.
Todd Gurley.
But you're griping about some of them, so there's got to be somebody else that you want to put in there.
Outside of Todd Gurley, when you look at the top 10.
You griped about Cam Jordan, you griped about Watt, you griped about Mac. So who else would go in?
Bell should be.
Bell?
Where's Bell in your list?
I forget. 13, something like that?
How far down is he in your list? He should be higher. Me personally, you can remove J.J. Watt and Cam Jordan.
And put Bell and who?
You can put Gurley in there sure.
Gurley and who?
19. Bell is 19.
Where's Gurley?
12.
So name me the.
So you're
name me 11
three
through
spots.
15 right now.
You're getting angry over three.
Yes,
spots.
Because they need to get their just due, Pete.
11, Luke Kuechly. 12, Todd Gurley. 13, Julio Jones. 14, Odell Beckham. 15, Calais Campbell.
Julio should be in top 10. I remove Julio.
Needs more touchdowns to get into the top 10. He had six touchdown catches last year.
JJ had how many sacks last year?
What?
Zero.
Well, we're talking about him being going forward.
And you're adding Calvin really into the fold as far as production that could help Julio Jones.
Julio has fewer touchdowns. Do you realize he has fewer touchdowns, I think, in the last 4 years than like all these average receivers?
So if you were taking.
I love Julio Jones.
Would you take Cameron Jordan? Not positions are not concerned over Julio Jones.
Cameron Jordan had a better year than
no.
Julio
would you
Jones
take? I just asked a question. I don't know. I just asked one.
Yes,
question.
Yes, I would. Position value is more.
You like these pass rushes, but Julio and Todd Gurley should be in the top 10. In my opinion.
Take pass rushes all day over any receiver.
I know. I'm just.
Would too.
Well, for this argument, I'm taking Julio and Todd Gurley in the top 10.
Todd Gurley almost made it. I'll give him that.
Yeah, and you just don't like running backs.
No, I don't like running backs. All right, that'll do it for this edition of Pick 6. Coming up later in the week, is Will Brinson coming back or not? No? Who do you got later in the week? Nick and JLC will be coming up tomorrow. All right, see you guys.